is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Turkey-Russia tensions escalate over Syria. A Yazidi American seeks help for refugees. Tis the season for flu.
The people that had received vaccine had 57% less chance of getting hospitalized with flu pneumonia than those patients that were not vaccinated.
A once popular American TV news anchorman gets the Hollywood treatment. These stories and more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. Turkey's president is questioning the future of relations between Ankara and Moscow after multiple reports of airspace violations by Russian military planes along the Turkish border with Syria. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said Tuesday it's not suitable for Turkey to accept what's been taking place. Turkey's airspace was violated for a second time, and there's a warning from the country's prime minister that Russian planes could be shot down because of it. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul on the simmering tensions.
The Russian ambassador, for a second time in as many days, was summoned by the Turkish Foreign Ministry to receive a diplomatic dressing down. The call was to protest a Russian warplane violating Turkish airspace on Sunday. Turkish fighter jets were scrambled Saturday to intercept a Russian bomber. Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu has warned Moscow that under Turkey's rules of engagement, its fighters are allowed to shoot down any warplane operating in Syria that violates Turkish airspace. Semih Idiz, a political columnist for Turkey's Cumhuriyet newspaper, says Ankara and Moscow are entering uncharted waters.
It's very significant, obviously, because it's never really happened before, not here. I mean, given Russia's latest military engagement in Syria, this becomes very significant, of course.
Moscow has blamed navigational error for the first violation and says it's investigating the second. But NATO says it believes the violations are deliberate. Russian jets have been carrying out airstrikes close to the Turkish border against Syrian rebels it accuses of being Islamic terrorists. Ankara, which is strongly backing the Syrian rebels and is committed to toppling the regime of Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad, has condemned Russia's ongoing airstrikes, a stance backed by NATO. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Russia last week began airstrikes against targets in Syria, claiming attacks on both Islamic State positions and what it called terrorist groups, rebel factions that oppose the Syrian government. Russia analyst Leslie Templeman-Holmes of the University of Melbourne in Australia told International Edition's Victor Beatty that such incursions were inevitable and Moscow's unfolding strategy in Syria is highly unpredictable.
One thing I've learned from studying Russia for 40 years or so, is that you simply cannot predict their leaders. Putin is very unpredictable. He knows that the Turks and NATO behind Turkey is extremely upset about these two incursions, claiming that these were a mistake or that it was only for a few seconds. But we've got high-level technology. The Russians have extremely sophisticated technology. Those kinds of excuses just don't cut it.
There is a coalition of some 40 Syrian insurgent groups, including some of the most powerful fighting against Bashar al-Assad and armed by Arab states, who've called on regional states to forge an alliance against Russia and Assad's other big foreign backer, Iran. That obviously raises the ante for Moscow.
It does. Not only for Moscow, it raises the ante for all of us, because this whole situation is getting messier and messier. The Russians tend to like to support what they see as legitimate governments, and they see Assad as more legitimate than the 40 groups you refer to. The trouble is that the whole situation is so messy. One of the reasons the West has been a little cautious in where it stands on the whole Syrian issue is because whereas some of the anti-Assad forces are moderate and would get wholehearted support from the West, others are definitely more in the terrorist area. They're definitely terrorist organizations, apart from IS itself. And this makes the whole thing complicated. That when you say 40 groups, they range across a whole, that's a whole range from moderate to radical extremists. And by getting more of the Arab states involved, this is, as you say, the phrase used, upping the ante, but not merely for Russia. It really is getting totally out of control.
U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter, who's speaking in Spain Monday, said Moscow is pursuing a losing strategy in Syria. His quote, Russia has escalated the civil war, putting further at risk the very political resolution and preservation of Syria's structure of future governance it says that it wants. It remains my hope, he said, that Vladimir Putin will see that tethering Russia to a sinking ship is a losing strategy.
When I last spoke to you, Victor, I talked about transition as one of the possible ways out of this apparent deadlock. I still think that that's a possibility, that the transition concept, that as long as it's made clear that Assad is on his way out, but not necessarily tomorrow, that this would be a negotiating position, both for Russia and for the West, and indeed for Turkey and the Middle Eastern states all involved in this. But there's no question that, in my opinion, if Putin really is determined to keep Assad in power long term, then there is absolutely no doubt that he is on a losing streak.
Leslie Templeton-Holmes, a Russia analyst at the University of Melbourne in Australia, speaking with International Edition's Victor Beatty. Turning now to social media, one Russian state news agency has been tweeting prolifically about the Russian air campaign over Syria. Michael Lippin is here to tell us about it. Michael, what is the agency saying?
Hi, Ray. Well, we're talking about the Sputnik news agency, whose English Twitter handle is @SputnikINT. It's got 86,000 followers, and it tweeted this note a few hours ago. U.S. refuses to coordinate coalition activities in Syria with Russian forces. Now, it linked to a Sputnik article quoting the Russian Defense Ministry as saying Tuesday that it asked representatives of the U.S.-led coalition in Syria to share intelligence on IS positions with Moscow. Now, in the piece, a Russian official says that if defense ministries of the U.S. coalition nations have additional intelligence on terrorists, we ask them to share it with us, and will certainly take it into account while planning Russian combat missions in Syria. Now, I was looking at that article, and nowhere does it mention any member of the U.S.-led coalition as saying that the coalition refuses to coordinate with Russia, but the Russian attitude appears to be, you know, you can share intelligence with us if you like, and we'll consider it, but, you know, we're just going to bomb our targets in Syria regardless of what you do.
Michael, what are some of the hashtags people are using to tweet about this Russian campaign?
Well, I've seen two hashtags start to get some traction in recent days. The Topsy Analytics website shows that hashtag Russia versus ISIL or Russia vs ISIL has been used more than 1,000 times in the last 24 hours, while hashtag Russian airstrikes has had about 400 mentions in the same period. One Twitter user who likes hashtag Russia versus ISIL has the handle @PaulDelaney2012. He's from Belfast, Northern Ireland, and he tweeted this. The Americans and the British said recently it could take 20 years to defeat ISIS, yet it looks like Russia versus ISIL is on course to do that in just 20 days. Now, I'm not sure if Russia can get the job done that quickly, but, you know, that's the message that Russia's supporters would certainly like to promote. Now, I'd like to leave you with one lighthearted tweet about the conflict in Syria, and this comes from a reporter for Arabic Al-An TV. Her name is Jenan Musa, and she is @JenanMusa. Musa is based in Dubai, but travels throughout the region, and she has 99,000 followers. She posted a picture of an Arabic cartoon, presumably by a Syrian artist, and in that image, we see 9 fighter jets flying high among the clouds, and then what looks like a traffic cop just, you know, standing around in the middle of them. And Musa's caption reads, "Policemen regulating air traffic over Syria." That's Syrian humor for you, Ray.
Yeah, it's a real rip-snorter there. Thanks, Michael. You can reach him on Twitter @Michael_Lippin or go to our website at www.voanews.com. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. U.S. financial markets slowed down a bit Tuesday after several days on the upside. Business correspondent Alexis Christophorus in New York tells us about what's behind the mild retreat.
Wall Street's recent rally lost some steam. A widening U.S. trade deficit and a cut in the International Monetary Fund's global economic outlook undercut some positive momentum. The IMF said it was more pessimistic about prospects for world growth as declining commodity prices and increasing market volatility take their toll, especially on emerging market economies. The U.S. trade deficit jumped almost 16% in August to $48.3 billion, largely because of a strong dollar that reduced exports to their lowest level in 3 years. Economists say that widening deficit could shave off one-half to three-fourths of a percentage point from third-quarter gross domestic product because businesses won't be adding to their inventories. Oil rose above $48 a barrel for a third day of gains as WTI added 4.5%, and Brent rose 4.2% to $51.30 a barrel. According to the U.S. Energy Department, U.S. crude production dropped 120,000 barrels a day in September from the prior month.
Alexis also tells us Twitter is looking to get more people to join up.
One day after Twitter announced Jack Dorsey as its CEO, the social network unveiled a new product called Moments, which will show curated tweets around certain news events or subjects. Moments represents Twitter's first real effort to get away from the live stream that's been its hallmark and to make interesting stories easier to find and news events easier to follow, both common user complaints. So when users follow a moment like a football game or a presidential primary debate, tweets about it will appear in their timeline. Of course, Twitter's picking and choosing of tweets gives it a significant amount of editorial power. A curation team will follow editorial guidelines to pick out the most compelling content. In the past month, Twitter has pushed heavily towards making its product more user-friendly, and investors are waiting to see if this will attract new users.
VOA business correspondent Alexis Christophorus in New York. The plight of the Yazidi, a religious ethnic minority in Iraq, drew world attention last year when Islamic State fighters drove thousands of them to a mountain refuge in Sinjar. Far away in the American Midwestern city of Lincoln, Nebraska, the largest community of Yazidi in North America took action, led in great part by a 26-year-old woman named Leila Hodeida. As VOA's Greg Aflakis reports, she continues to seek help for her threatened people in northern Iraq.
The Nebraska chapter of the National Association of Social Workers honored social worker Leila Hodeida as Citizen of the Year for her work in advocating on behalf of people on the other side of the world. Her close friend and fellow social worker, Christy Abdul, is impressed with her dedication to the Yazidi cause.
She's just very inspiring in how she's so passionate about what's happening there.
Though she has lived in Lincoln since her early teenage years, Leila Hodeida was born and raised in a refugee camp in Syria after her family fled persecution by Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein.
Having lived in the same conditions, I feel deeply and emotionally connected to the Yazidi cause.
Leila has had cell phone contact with some of the Yazidi girls taken by Islamic State to be used as sex slaves. She remembers one in particular.
She was with other 40 Yazidis, women and children mainly, who were being held in one of the buildings. And she would tell me that the ISIS fighters came and took another girl.
But appeals to the U.S. and other countries to rescue the captive Yazidis failed.
One day I called and her sister answered the phone and she told me that, so I asked for her name. I thought it was still the same person that I was talking to. And she said, no, I'm her sister and My sister was actually sold off yesterday to an ISIS fighter.
Some women have managed to escape, but the punishment for those who are caught can be torture or worse.
One woman that tried to escape, they caught her, they brought her back, and they cut off her two legs.
Through Yazda, a group Leila Khoveda and some other American Yazidis formed last year, she continues to seek help for the estimated 3,000 Yazidi women and girls who remain under the brutal control of Islamic State. Greg Flakes, VOA News, Lincoln, Nebraska.
Coming up, getting ready for the flu season. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
People who jump into icy water say the experience increases their energy level and makes them feel good. Now some are jumping into what's called whole body cryotherapy, entire body submersion in a chamber cooled by liquid nitrogen down to minus 130 degrees Celsius.
You feel wonderful, it helps you sleep, you totally relax.
Customers like Lena Roth stand in a tall chamber for less than 3 minutes, wearing a bathing suit, socks and gloves, and staying in motion to protect their extremities from frostbite. Advocates say cryotherapy puts the body into survival mode, sending oxygen and nutrients to the body's core. But doctors say the benefits of the practice are not proven and caution there's a long list of health risks for people with high blood pressure, skin infections, diabetes, and other factors. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. Many people around the world suffer from dust-related allergies caused mainly by tiny mites that live in bed linen. Polish scientists report they have successfully tested a fabric that is impenetrable to the microscopic critters. VOA science reporter George Putich joined International Edition Susan Yaki to talk about it.
What we need to know is that dust mites are nasty little creatures.
Yes, I've seen pictures of them, and they're really icky.
They are. They are. And unfortunately, they are our bedfellows. Scientists say that a normal, regular bed contains at least 100,000 of those creatures. Now, they're harmless themselves, but unfortunately, they produce an enzyme called proteases that causes severe allergies in many people. And it's not the even yuckier thing about it, it's not the dust mites themselves, it's their feces.
Eek.
And they produce a lot of it, and it's in our bedding. We cannot get it. It's impossible to totally eradicate them. They are always around us because they eat our shedded skin.
George, this is getting worse and worse.
It is. I'm afraid it is, but this is something we have to live with. What we can do, we can reduce their number, and that can help people who are suffering from dust allergies.
How does this fabric work?
The fabric works in a simple way, actually. It has such a structure that it allows moisture and air to go through, but does not allow the dust mites to go through, and especially their feces particles. So the scientists in Woods University, in Medical University in Poland, say that they have manufactured this fabric that reduces the quantity of dust mites for up to 70%. And they say that people who have tested the fabric say that for the first time they actually managed to sleep nice.
So it's comfortable. It doesn't feel starchy or odd.
That's what they say. It's comfortable. It's very soft. It looks very soft in the picture. And what's even more important, the quality of that fabric does not go away with washing.
So on washing day, you're still safe?
Correct.
Any idea on how much this might cost?
Unfortunately, no, because it is not yet in production, but the scientists in Woods expect that it will be in production very soon.
So if the mites can't get through the linen, do they stay in your mattress?
They stay in your mattress, but there are ways to clean the mattress, and one should explore a little bit, if it's possible, on the internet, because there are many methods that can help reduce the number of mites in the mattress.
VOA science reporter George Putich speaking with my colleague Susan Yockey. Influenza, more popularly known as the flu, is caused by a virus that affects the respiratory system. Most people recover, but the flu can be serious enough to put you in the hospital with pneumonia. VOA's Carol Pearson tells us about a study that looks at whether getting a flu shot can help you from getting pneumonia.
We asked America's top public health specialist, Dr. Tom Frieden, what he is most concerned about.
Influenza remains the largest single risk the world faces.
Frieden heads the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, commonly known as the CDC. Even in a good year, when the flu is relatively mild, hundreds of thousands of people die from the flu around the world.
And in a bad flu year, it goes into the millions.
The CDC says more than 200,000 people are hospitalized from flu-related complications each year in the United States. Pneumonia is one of the most serious complications of the flu. Dr. Carlos Grijalba at Vanderbilt University Medical Center was one of the co-authors of a CDC-sponsored study that looked at more than 2,000 patients with pneumonia who were admitted to U.S. hospitals over three flu seasons.
About 6% of those patients had pneumonias due to influenza.
Dr. Catherine Edwards from Vanderbilt University Medical Center said researchers also looked at how many patients with pneumonia had been vaccinated against the flu.
The people that had received vaccine had 57% less chance of getting hospitalized with flu pneumonia than those patients that were not vaccinated.
Dr. Edwards said the study found the vaccines were a bit less effective for older patients and for those who had weak immune systems, but they worked well for healthy people and children.
The vaccine seemed to work very well in young children, in individuals less than 65.
Because the vaccine is not 100% effective, doctors also recommend frequent hand washing and staying away from those who have the flu. The study appears in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
A well-known former American television news anchorman is a subject of a new movie. Oscar winners Robert Redford and Cate Blanchett explore the controversial events surrounding the downfall of former CBS News anchor Dan Rather in a new film called Truth. International Edition's David Byrd has details.
The year is 2004, and George W. Bush is running for re-election. Then CBS News anchor Dan Rather and producer Mary Mapes broadcast what became a highly controversial report that said the former president had used his father's political influence to escape service in Vietnam. The movie is based on Mapes' autobiographical book, Truth and Duty, The Press, The President, and The Privilege of Power. The controversy over the so-called Killian documents, documents which criticized Mr. Bush's service in the Texas Air National Guard instead of going to Vietnam, is the center of the film. It was learned later that CBS had not authenticated the documents, which were supposedly from Bush's commanding officer, the late Lieutenant Colonel Jerry B. Killian. The network eventually repudiated the documents and its reporting and issued a public apology. Both Mapes and Rather lost their jobs, along with several executives at the network. At the Los Angeles premiere of the film, Cate Blanchett, who plays Mary Mapes in the movie, said that Truth presents the facts without spin or revision.
And I think the film is like a glass of water. It just it presents the events as they happened and then throws it back to the audience to say, well, how do you feel about corporate media ownership and in its proximity to politics? And I think it transcends cultures. Yes, it's very particularly about American politics and American media ownership, but that those questions are relevant whether you live in Europe or Australasia or the States.
Robert Redford plays Dan Rather in the film. Redford did not attend the L.A. premiere, but Cate Blanchett says that working with him was something she had wanted to do for a long time.
To work opposite him, I mean, he's so disarmingly frank and present and engaged, and he asks really dangerous questions, I think, both politically, culturally, socially, but as an actor, he puts people at ease, but also keeps them on their toes, and that's a very rare sort of quality to get to the chance to act opposite, so I relished every second.
The film marks the directorial debut for James Vanderbilt, better known for his writing and producing of The Amazing Spider-Man, Zodiac, and The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Vanderbilt says he revels in the kind of story that gives viewers an insider's take on events.
And I love movies where you can kind of go behind the curtain and sort of see how things are done and how things are made. And so I love the idea of doing that with television news. And this seemed to be the perfect story to do that with because there were so many facets of what happened. And then being able to do it with somebody like Cate and see it through her eyes, see it through Mary Mapes' eyes, was really exciting to me.
Truth also stars Stacy Keach as Lieutenant Colonel Bill Burkett, who turned over the Killian documents to CBS. Elizabeth Moss stars as producer Lucy Scott, and Dennis Quaid plays Colonel Roger Charles, who worked with Mary Mapes when she broke the story of prisoner abuse at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq. Topher Grace plays researcher Mike Smith, and John Benjamin Hickey stars as Mark Rolstad, Mapes' husband. Truth was shown at this year's Toronto Film Festival and makes its U.S. debut October 16th. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can get more news and information along with videos and interviews on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States strongly condemns the dual explosions in the Yanya and Kuji areas of Abuja on October 2nd, and the suicide bombings and militant attacks in Maiduguri and Adamawa on October 1st. We extend our deepest condolences to the families and loved ones of those killed and injured. These tragic events are stark reminders that violent extremists will stop at nothing to inflict horrific and indiscriminate harm upon innocent civilians. In particular, Boko Haram's reign of terror and sheer brutality have left thousands dead and millions displaced. To assist those nations threatened by Boko Haram, President Barack Obama recently delegated authority to the Secretary of State to direct the drawdown of up to $45 million in defense articles and services, as well as military education and training to support Benin, Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Nigeria's efforts to defeat Boko Haram. This will enable the Secretary to authorize the provision of critical airlift support and other assistance, including to help the Lake Chad Basin countries move troops and equipment to the border region from which Boko Haram terrorists continue to launch brutal attacks on civilians. This assistance builds on training, equipment, and logistical support that the United States is providing using other authorities. The United States also continues to provide advisors and share information with our regional partners to enhance counter-Boko Haram operations, as well as victim support and counter-violent extremism programming. Since 2009, Boko Haram has killed more than 10,000 people, devastated communities, and left deep scars in the lives of those affected by its violence. Boko Haram's indiscriminate violence has created more than 2 million internally displaced persons and over 200,000 refugees throughout the Lake Chad Basin region. Defeating Boko Haram will require a holistic campaign that protects human rights, pairs progress on development and governance with security measures, and fills in behind military successes with civilian stabilization efforts. The United States stands with our partners in the region who are fighting to end Boko Haram's campaign of terror that threatens to rob an entire generation of the benefits of unfettered access to education, health care, and economic development.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's for what's your name?